If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Ketchup Podcast.
What is up? I'm Kyle Eckert.
I'm Chris Heck.
And you are listening to another Geek Ketchup Wrestling Recap, a spotlight series where we analyze the biggest pay-per-views from the world of professional wrestling. Since we only hit the majors, make sure to follow us on social media to track which wrestling events we'll be breaking down at Geek Ketchup Pod on Twitter and Instagram, Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook. But this time around, though, we'll be recapping WWE SummerSlam 2020. The 33rd SummerSlam came to us live from the Amway Center in Orlando, which has been completely overhauled and rechristened as the WWE Thunderdome. Looking for an alternative to the Performance Center during COVID times, WWE revamped the arena, outfitting a new rig for the ring, lights, and pyrotechnics, with the cherry on top being the lined television screens all around the stands, presenting fans that have Zoomed called into the event, creating a live fan atmosphere.
Yeah, Kyle, I'm really enjoying the Thunderdome design. You know, I wish they would have done it earlier because I do think it adds a big ambiance boost, even though it's not quite the same as a live crowd, right? We're never going to get to the same as a live crowd unless there's a live crowd there.
Right, yeah.
But it's really close, and it definitely does add to the effect of the matches.
I totally agree. I think with the fans, the visual of even just their faces there, and they're moving and laughing and smiling, and some of them wearing costumes, and every now and then you'll get like a parent holding their baby there as well. So it brings like an extra dynamic to the matches. And I think they're also pumping in some crowd noise,
yeah,
which helps.
I think they're doing it on cues because I saw it a few times where the fans were giving like thumbs up and thumbs down.
Yeah.
And then when that would happen, it would seem like the boos or the cheers would come in. So, you know, once again, it's about as close as you're going to get. I kept thinking about how bright it has to be in that arena right now, because you've got the big screen from the stage, the lasers, and then what, like 1,000 giant TVs? Like, it just looks like you would walk in there and go blind.
Oh, absolutely. And the way the rig is set up on the top of the ring, it's like a spider or an octopus dangling from the top and its legs going out and around the ring,
yep,
all of which are lit up just kind of to spotlight the ring and everything else around it. So you're right, it's got to be so hot on top of throwing your body around and doing wrestling, which definitely doesn't make you sweat already. All in all, though, it has definitely boosted the environment. I thought AEW did well when they originally started bringing in the extra roster members,
right,
to kind of like outline the outside of the ring and make some noise. Kudos and hats off to WWE for taking it one step further and saying, how can we actually get real fans to interact in a fun new way? And it could change how all pay-per-views are done moving forward, even after COVID times are done.
For sure. Yeah, we'll have to see how it goes and really how it maybe continues to evolve as well.
Could be cool. But as per usual with WWE pay-per-views, NXT held a takeover event on Saturday night. We'll run through the results of NXT 30, then dive into Sunday night's SummerSlam. So to kick off the pre-show event on NXT 30, we saw a tag team number one contendership match that had Legado del Fantasma going up against Breezango and Lorcan and Birch. Breezango picked up the win and are now in line to challenge Imperium.
Good for them for continuing to stay relevant. Every time you think that Breezango is gone or may not even be on the roster, boom, here they come, back on TV, back right in the picture.
Yeah, they've done well with that gimmick. Well done, well done. Moving on to the main card, it started with Finn Balor versus Timothy Thatcher. This was mostly a mat battle, and it ended with Finn getting his 12th takeover win, the most in NXT history.
Yeah, big time for Finn. He's got that streak going, almost Undertaker-esque with the Mania streak. I felt like it was a little bit underwhelming with Timothy Thatcher coming out. Like, it just seemed like a lower-end opponent for somebody as big as Finn Balor. But the match ended up impressing. It was a lot of good technical wrestling, and Finn can make anybody look real well when he's in there working. So it was still a good match, all in all.
Yeah, great way to start off the pay-per-view for sure. Then we had a ladder match for the vacated North American Championship. Keith Lee, a few weeks back, was both the North American champion and the NXT champion. He vacated the North American belt, which led to this ladder match. I had Bronson Reed going up against Cameron Grimes, Damian Priest, Johnny Gargano, and the Velveteen Dream. In classic Matterlatch fashion, there were lots of huge spots, but in the end, it was Damian Priest standing tall.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that Damian Priest got it. I was really expecting either Gargano or Dream to pick up to be the first ever two-time North American champ. But all in all, it was a good match. It was pretty good performances from everybody. I thought Bronson Reed stood out. That huge powerbomb slash German suplex slash superplex with four of the guys out of the corner was probably my favorite spot of the match.
Oh yeah, ladder matches always excel in the high spots. Then we saw an in-ring debut as Pat McAfee took on former NXT champ Adam Cole. Adam Cole did get the win here, as you would expect, but hats off to Pat McAfee for a great debut.
Maybe the best performance debut I can remember from a non-wrestler. Pat McAfee came out, he was in shape, he was trained, he was ready to go. He's got the world's strongest leg, and he went toe-to-toe with Adam Cole. I mean, there was nothing really lacking from that match, and at some points I actually thought that maybe they were going to let Pat pull it off there, but ultimately Adam Cole took care of it.
Yeah, you would imagine Adam Cole's just too big to take the loss there, but Pat McAfee impressed me. I'd like to see him in the ring again.
Yeah, it was a good story, a little different with the commentator coming in to wrestle a top guy, but the build and the payoff seemed to work.
Absolutely. Then we saw a women's championship match with Io Shirai taking on Dakota Kai. Io Shirai is the champion here, and she retained her belt, but there was a little extra drama as Raquel Gonzalez got involved, or tried to get involved a few times, and even at the end of the match, after Io Shirai had won, Gonzalez gets in the ring to try to jump her with Dakota Kai, but Rhea Ripley came down and saved her, and then they had a nice little stare-off right there at the end.
Yeah, I really like the big moonsault that Io used to win here, but the bigger news, and it kind of overshadowed the match, was the return of Rhea Ripley.
Yeah, I mean, glad to see that whatever passport problems they were having, she's back and she can get some more action. You know, Rhea Ripley is a top-notch competitor and should be there. That moves on to the main event for NXT 30, the champion Keith Lee taking on Karrion Kross, and I gotta say, these are two big-time hosses doing big-time hoss things. Surprisingly, Kross gets the win and is your new NXT champion.
This was a freaking slobber knocker. I mean, both those guys are legit big men with tons of power. Keith Lee, way more athletic than anybody would think for how big he is and kind of how heavy he is, right?
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the match. I was a little surprised that he dropped the belt so soon. But he's got big future in front of him, and Karrion Kross looks like somebody who can have a run here in NXT and maybe take things up a notch on the intensity level for a little bit.
Interesting little gimmick there with Scarlett and some magic sides to everything, and we'll see what happens. You know, NXT isn't afraid to experiment, so let them try that out for a bit.
True.
All right, let's switch gears here and get to the reason we are here. That, of course, is SummerSlam 2020. There was a pre-show match, and it was the United States Championship, Apollo Crews champion taking on MVP. A lot of mat groundwork to start this match, Apollo going for the quick pin, and then some back and forth, as you would predict, both very athletic guys, MVP maybe on the tail end of his career, so he's not as athletic as he used to be. Back and forth all night with some nice big spots, especially out of Apollo Crews. There was a third rope superplex spot that eventually led to both competitors getting knocked outside of the ring, going for a full double nine count. They get back in the ring, more back and forth, big spots. Eventually, MVP goes to get some offense, but gets reversed by Crews, who lifts him up, hits that spin out powerbomb, gets the pin, belt retained. Hurt Business comes down to try to jump Crews, but it's to no avail as Apollo escapes. What were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'm really glad to see Apollo getting a decent run here. He's been U.S. champ now for a couple of weeks, and they've been doing a lot of build between him and MVP, you know, leading up to this match. I am not a huge MVP fan, but this feud has worked well, and he's kind of had a strong last run here. It was a good match. I kind of hope that they move on and let Apollo feud with somebody that can really keep up with him and his athleticism. MVP did all right, but Crews is a wildly talented guy. He can move around, he can high fly, he can do pretty much everything, and I'd like to see him paired up with some of the younger guys that can really keep that pace the whole match and give us some of the things that we saw from him early on in his NXT days and when he first came to the main roster.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, he does front handsprings. He does a standing moonsault. A lot of big suplexes, and the guy can go top rope if he wants. He did so much in NXT. He's never really had that time to shine on the main roster. What I would like to see here is just switch him over maybe to Shelton Benjamin or Bobby Lashley, who are both in the Hurt Business. They're in that faction he's feuding with. I think it would be a simple transition to getting him paired with a younger guy that could move at the quicker pace to fully show off how crazy athletic he is.
Yeah, I think they would be able to do a little bit more in ring than MVP, but I think younger is a relative term even with those guys.
Oh, that's, yeah, I mean, Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin are no spring chickens.
Right.
They're just not quite MVP old.
And right.
I sit here and say that MVP is probably like late 40s. He's not that old, but as far as a professional athlete, that's pretty old.
Yep.
Moving on to the main card, we kick things off with the SmackDown Women's Championship match. Champion Bayley with Sasha Banks in her corner going up against Asuka. Of course, Asuka having to pull the double and going for the Raw Women's Championship later in the night. All of this determined by a beat the clock challenge on SmackDown on who would go first. Asuka came out the gate very physical, punching Bayley with punches, hip toss, drop kicks. It was wild out the gate.
Yeah, this was a super hard-hitting match. One of the best women's matches I've seen in a number of weeks. Start to finish, it was high intensity, total slugfest, had some high-impact moves. There was one moment where Bayley came and hit, I think it was a Destroyer or a Code Red or some variation of the two, on Asuka into the turnbuckle, like into the corner, that just looked like it hurt. All in all, I really enjoyed this match. I thought that it set a great tone for the SummerSlam event.
I totally agree. They came out, they hit hard. There was a huge outside the ring DDT off the steps that Asuka hit early. And that kind of like, whoa, okay, here we go. SummerSlam's going to be legit. These two women are stepping their game up. Of course, like I said, back and forth for a lot. They told really good story of submissions. They did a few back and forth submission moves, worked Asuka's leg, which does come back into play when she has her match against Sasha Banks. Because that was a constant story of she's got double matches. So any damage that Bayley does now is certainly going to be in effect later when Asuka has to fight Sasha. Sasha, of course, tries to help Bayley as much as she could. That's their thing as the golden role models. You know, they're sneaky little heels. They'll do whatever they need to do to make sure the other person wins. How are you liking that heel run?
I love it. I think that Bayley's come into her own. I mean, the boss has always had that heel edge, and she's just got that swagger that she can live in that territory. But for Bayley, it was a little different. She came out as like an ultimate face, spent a lot of time in that role, and you could tell that that probably lined up more with her natural personality and style.
Sure.
But now that we're a few months into the soccer mom Bayley, you know, heel run and the golden role models, I think that they've hit their stride. It's really a gimmick with the golden role models that's grown on me as time has gone by. At first, it felt a little bit pedestrian, a little bit the same as what we've seen, but I think they've gotten into that groove. They've found a way to really elevate what they're doing and their promos and their actions. You see some great chemistry between them when one is in the ring and the other is outside.
Yeah.
Probably saw it a little bit more in the Sasha Banks match, but just the way they chat at each other and react to things, like they have perfect chemistry right now. And all in all, I thought that Asuka had a really tough task ahead of her. I wasn't surprised that this match went down the way that it did. And of course, you had some interference with the boss towards the end here. But the best thing about it, I thought, was that, and we'll get into some of it a little bit later when we talk about the Sasha Asuka match, was that even though they were three or four matches apart, it almost felt like one big match.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to tip the hat to that because, you know, it takes a lot to craft something like that over the course of two separate matches.
It really does. Kudos, like you said, hats off to all the competitors here. But as Chris mentioned, there was a sunset flip bomb into the corner, which kind of set up this whole sequence where they were right near the ropes. And Bayley was going for a submission, Asuka was going for a submission on Bayley. Sasha was getting involved. Sasha gets kicked in the head. This explodes a little bit. They stand up. They get really stuck on the ropes. And Asuka is about to hit Bayley with a hip bump. And just at the final moment, Sasha pushes Bayley out of the way and takes the hit.
Yep.
Bayley capitalizes, gets the roll up, 1, 2, 3. Bayley is still champ, but by all means, remember that finish because it will come back into play. In the end, Bayley is still your SmackDown Women's Champion and now has a 308-day reign championship.
Yeah, much longer than I ever expected, but she deserves it. I think right now she is one of the top women in the company, definitely one of the top women heels, so I have no problem. I've seen some people be a little upset with how much gold the two of them have had, and you don't want to see that all the time, but right now, it's working.
I agree. Then we got a brief backstage segment with Dominik and Rey Mysterio talking about Dominik's match with Seth Rollins a little later. That'll come into play once again. I'm just trickling in all the little pieces so you can put it into your mind of what's coming a little later. Then we got a surprise commentary visit from KO coming down wearing a Street Profits shirt prior to the Raw Tag Team Championships.
Yeah, he's all about the Street Profits.
He is. Yeah, he loves it. You know, he wants the smoke. He wants the smoke. But led into the Raw Tag Team Championship match, which was the Street Profits, Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford taking on Andrade and Angel Garza with Zelina Vega, of course. Street Profits had a pretty cool entrance and they made it rain solo cups. That was awesome.
Yeah, I really like that. I love their swagger. They've got it. They've got the gimmick. Everything is working for them. And so when they dropped the solo cups, I was like, that's a perfect little extra bump for their entrance.
Yeah, and you know what? They've been crushing it. They've done everything WWE has asked them to do. They've brought the energy. They've brought the hype. And I'd like to see him continue on this role. But we'll get into the match because I love this match because I love tag team wrestling. And I really thought that this was a great showcase for quality tag team wrestling. Hard shots out the gate between Andrade and Montez Ford. Then a massive Hurricane Rana with Andrade on the turnbuckle. That was crazy and super athletic out of Montez Ford.
Dude, he literally did what, like a 6-foot box jump.
Yeah.
He essentially flat foot jumped up and hooked Andrade with his legs around the neck and Hurricane Ronned him off the top of the turnbuckle. My jaw dropped.
Oh, yeah. The dude is crazy athletic. He's super tall as well. So for him to get elevated and get over.
Oh, yeah.
Is pretty wild. Even watching it right before the match started. My girlfriend was like, man, that guy is tall. And I thought, like, no, they're all in the ring with Zelina Vega, and she's really short, so she's making them look tall. But then as the match progressed, I was like, oh, no, Montez Ford is just really freaking tall.
He's got basketball build.
Yeah.
Where he's really tall, and he's very muscular, but he's not really thick.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a big dude. D'Angelo is like twice his size from a bulk aspect.
Yeah.
Montez looks like he should be running up and down with the Lakers.
Yeah, he does. I mean, yeah, solid build. It's true. But the action goes all over the place. We get dives to the outside. We get big slams. We get a funny little moment where Garza ripped off his pants at a perfect moment where Graves is clearly talking about something else and says, oh, thank goodness. I don't know if you picked up on that one. But it was just this moment where right as Garza ripped off his pants, Greaves goes, oh, thank goodness. And the whole commentary team just froze because it was just hilarious. It was a hilarious moment.
He lives for that moment.
He does. He does. He just loves it. But got Andrade and Angel work in the corner for some more of that solid tag stuff that we like to see. Ford escaped, got that hot tag. Dawkins goes big on Andrade, delivering elbows. Get another double tag, get a huge cross body out of Montez Ford. He gets so much height when he jumps off the turnbuckle.
Yes, yes.
It's insanity. Like, the dude is just can't say enough. He's so, so athletic. But the match breaks down for a bit and gets a little tornado taggy for a while. Like, and just all hell breaks loose. But that leads to Zelina Vega trying to interfere. She gets bumped off the apron. Andrade goes to check on her. But in the process, he leaves Angel Garza open. And by himself, and of course, Dawkins and Ford capitalize. Dawkins hits his big spinebuster move. Ford goes for a massive turning frog splash.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a nice little twist on his finisher. Street Profits get the 1, 2, 3 and retain.
Yeah, I like that they retained. I did not see Angel and Andrade winning here. I like them and what they've got going on, but at the same time, I prefer the belts on the Street Profits right now. They're just hot. They've got the smoke. They want it. I was a little upset to see how fast this match actually was.
Yeah.
Because I watched the beginning, saw the big Hurricane Rana, stepped away for a few minutes, came back, looked away, and then it was over. You know? And I was really excited for this match just because you look at those four guys with their skill sets, and you just knew that it was going to be a lot of good spots, a lot of high energy. And while we got that, I was actually just expecting a little bit more out of it.
You know, WWE, not big on their tag teams, and I don't know why, because their tag teams are pretty good.
That's true.
But we'll move on here. We get a little Kayla Braxton interview with Bayley and Sasha, and I bring it up because during the interview, there's a nice, subtle touch of passive-aggressiveness. Kayla asks if she's going to win against Asuka later, and Sasha's response at the beginning of her sentence, she says, well, if Bayley can beat Asuka, then I can. And I thought that was nice because they've been playing the heel turn. They've been playing the breakup very subtly for a long time. While they're golden role models, they're best friends, eventually a breakup is coming, and little seeds like this go a long way for me.
Yeah, at times it bugs me a little bit because it has been such a slow play, and the friendship turn is not really a new storyline in wrestling, right? As we're about to see when we talk about the next match.
Yeah.
But they have been doing it pretty well, and I like that they are building it in a way that we should get a really epic payoff. Whenever it comes down to the two of them, and it will, whether it's Survivor Series or one of the pay-per-views down the line here a little bit, I expect a top-tier women's match from the two of them.
No, absolutely. I mean, they're so good, you would expect it. Something like TakeOver Brooklyn.
Yeah, exactly.
So Chris mentioned it. We had a frenemies-styled match up next, as it was Sonya Deville taking on Mandy Rose. This was originally billed as a hair versus hair matchup, and it got transitioned into a loser, a no DQ, loser leaves WWE. I did a little research on why it got changed. I don't know if you picked up on any of this, but there's an insane personal story going on with Sonya Deville right now, where she's got, I guess, a stalker fan invaded her home.
Yeah.
And she's in the middle of a court case. So there's a lot of rumors floating that, unfortunately, they did not want to do a hair versus hair match because she didn't want to have to go to court with a shaved head and look kind of how that would appear in the court. She wants everything on her side.
Yeah.
Really, really unfortunate what is happening with Sonya Deville. Fans need to check themselves for sure.
Yeah.
We won't harp on it, but this is an absolutely insane situation that has bled over into the story a little bit. But they continued on with their no DQ. A lot of brawling in this match. They instantly went to the outside. They were throwing each other into the steps, into the barricades. We had a suplex on the ramp, a flying clothesline off the announcer's table. High energy, a little sloppy, maybe.
A touch. I actually thought, all in all, though, it was a very good match. I gave him a little bit of a pass on, some of the sloppiness simply because it was a straight brawl. And, you know, they had all the intensity and they were just going at each other. And that was the storyline. And even though it was a familiar storyline, as we were just talking about with the friendship twist and all of that, I actually thought both women brought huge intensity to it. The build over the last couple of weeks just kept getting stronger and stronger.
Yep.
Gave me a reason to care about two characters that I otherwise don't really care. And I actually thought that the loser leaves town or loser leaves the company match stipulation was the perfect thing to really kind of put it over the top and make me truly stand up, you know, and pay attention once they came out. Whereas in other pay-per-views, maybe this would be the bathroom break match.
Yeah.
Or get the snack match. Grab a smoke match.
Yeah. I think Jim Cornette calls them the popcorn fart matches.
Popcorn fart. Yeah, he would say something like that. The reason why I say I kind of gave him a pass, too, on the sloppiness was I actually thought this might have been the best match I've seen out of both women.
Really?
From the whole time they've been here, I really thought that they both were just on point. I thought that Mandy Rose's Fifth Element-inspired gear was fantastic. And I was entertained start to finish. I was focused in on it. I was happy to see what was going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll say I like both of these superstars, and I was super happy to see them get some singles action. Fire and Desire never really quite got their due in the tag division, but I liked both people. Once again, it was a sloppy, back-and-forth, brawling-style match, but it fit the tone. Couple back-and-forths, but Mandy ended up getting the upper hand, hit a few running knees, a double hook inverted suplex, followed by another running knee. kind of a shock finish with all of that because it just happened like boom, boom, boom.
Oh, she wrecked her.
Yeah, she like wrecked her and it was like, whoa, like the match just click ended. But Mandy gets the pin and the win. Sonya freaks out a little bit. Otis comes down, celebrates with his girlfriend, quote unquote girlfriend. Like I said, I like both of these competitors. I'd love to see more out of them. But at the same time, you can see between the Bayley Asuka match and the Mandy Sonya match, there is like a tier in the women's division. And this is definitely the second tier.
Sure.
It's going to take more time with the experts at the top to get them quality ring time and ring exposure and to make them fully be top stars.
I agree, and they've only gotten little touches here and there. Mandy Rose has found herself a way to stay relevant and stay on TV throughout the months, even when she hasn't had as much going on in the ring. But I will say that my immediate thought after she won this match was that I hope that they do give her a little bit of that push, because I think that she showed last night that she does have the potential. She's got the look. She's like a little Trish Stratus running around, honestly. And I think that she could, you know, rise to the occasion if they actually put her in a program with one of those top tier talents like a Sasha, Bayley, Asuka, whoever it may be.
Well, and I think in that situation, the top tier talent might pull them along a little bit and help them out.
Exactly.
Get some house shows, get some more ring time with somebody that maybe is a little more comfortable taking bigger bumps. Not that Sonya's not. She's been around for a while, but just more exposure and different wrestling styles could benefit everybody. Moving on to the Dominic Mysterio with Rey Mysterio in his corner versus Seth Rollins, who, of course, has Buddy Murphy in his corner. So I talked about that backstage segment a little bit. In that backstage segment, Dominic asked his father to not get involved. Let this be his fight. Let him stand on his own two feet as his own wrestler, not be in the shadow of his father.
Ballsy move.
Rey agreed, but then also stayed by ringside the entire time. So maybe that'll play out in a weird way. I definitely could see in the long run, Dominic and Rey kind of having a match and passing the torch and Dominic becoming a legitimate superstar. I don't know what you thought about that.
Yeah, I actually kind of expect that to be the payoff in the end, is eventually Dominic's going to turn on Rey. Maybe even Rey's last match as a professional wrestler could be against his son. I like the touch that they had here with, you know, I call her Mrs. Mysterio, but Dominic's mom, Rey's wife, coming in.
Yeah.
She was looking baller in that Louis Vuitton top. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, she looked like she was wearing a Louis Vuitton bag up top. But yeah, Rey came down to the ring even though Dominic asked him to stay out. And it really did add, I had no problem with that because I thought that it really helped cover for some of Dominic in the match. Like, you were able to take a little bit of the focus off of him as essentially a brand new wrestler who's barely been in the ring on TV. And you had these really good moments between Rey and Seth, you know, as Seth's yelling at him, "Hey, Dad, come help your son. Do you want to jump in here? You know, you can end this." Like, there was a lot of good storytelling going on through this match. And really, man, one of the things I have to say was that this was just kind of a brutal match at times. Like, Dominic and Seth kicked the shit out of each other.
Oh, yeah.
And especially with those kendo sticks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The kendo sticks, I definitely have marked down here. The kendo sticks absolutely took front and center. And they have been in this whole story.
Yeah.
We've seen the kendo sticks kind of used throughout. Even dating back to the Rey and Seth feud, where they used kendo sticks, which ultimately ended in Rey losing his eye, of course.
Yeah.
But that's where everything started. So to get the match going here, Chris talked about Mrs. Mysterio's attire, but before we get into the meat and potatoes of the match, we should probably talk about Seth Rollins' attire, because it was a nice little homage to Halloween Havoc 97 Rey Mysterio with the purple and the question marks.
Yeah, the Phantasm gear back when he was rolling on Billy Zane inspiration. But yeah, I really liked it. As soon as I saw it, I was just like, that was a nice touch. I love how much they work in homages to the past and different pieces of feuds and things like that. It really has kind of created this extra touch that I think we saw a little bit here and there in the past in wrestling, but it seems like this current generation has really embraced, you know, mixing up their gear like that in interesting ways, whether it's a character inspiration or something like this where it kind of fuels the fire of the feud. I'd be okay if Seth wore those a little more.
Yeah, yeah, if he just kind of rolls with it for the rest of the feud. I mean, Raw is on as we speak, so hopefully he's rocking it for Raw a little later. But we'll get it, like I said, we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the match. Rollins, being the experienced wrestler, definitely goes to the full mat wrestling to start it off. And he's just working over Dominic through in and throughout. He's got hip tosses, a lot of hip tosses tonight. And then he gains the upper hand, stomps out Dominic, gets Murphy to throw him a kendo stick. Short little moment where they run around the ring, some silliness of Dominic, you know, stealing the kendo stick and then chasing Rollins and swinging and missing. We get a little chin lock city action with a lot of ground holds where Rollins takes back the upper hand on Dominic. And mind you, throughout all of this, like Chris said, Rollins is taunting Ray. And it's really allowing for, like, maybe the lack of wrestling that was happening for storytelling.
Yeah, I didn't really see it as a lack of wrestling. It was definitely a different match because it was a street fight. So it wasn't your typical wrestling match. But I also thought that Dominic did pretty good all in all. I was fairly impressed for him being so fresh to the ring and being on that stage with somebody like Seth Rollins, who's one of the best in the world. That's a big task to live up to. And for the most part, he did it. He showed a lot of good athleticism. He hit a lot of classic, you know, lucha type moves, and he did them pretty well. My one knock was that it looked like he got gassed kind of early on. I don't know if you picked up on that, but there was one point where he ran into the corner and he went to do the kick the legs up, you know, to reverse and go over top the opponent. Now you're behind him. And he barely got his legs up.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, like 8 minutes into the match or something like that. I don't feel like it was very long. And I was like, I don't know, man. I was like, this guy might be gassed. And so I don't know if maybe some of the other events in the match, like the Chinlock City moments or whatever it was, you know, they kind of pivoted to give him a few minutes to catch his breath and get his wind.
Yeah, just take a breath.
Or what? I also figured that when they do the part where they go after Ray and they had him handcuffed, that actually gave Dom a lot of time on the ground, off on the side, off camera.
Yeah.
And it seemed like then when he came back from that into the final third of the match, he had all his wind back and he was running around 619s, you know, a couple big spots. So that was probably my biggest knock on him overall that I saw.
Well, and it was a 25 minute match. It was probably one, like, the longest, easily top two, maybe even the longest match of the pay-per-view.
That's a good point. They put a lot of pressure on him for being, I don't know if it was his first match, but it's the first real match I've seen, and let alone being on SummerSlam and the whole nine yards. Like,
yeah.
You never know how people are going to perform, but it looked like Ray had him ready.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he's got a promising career in front of him if he can keep it up.
We'd hope so. As Chris said, the handcuffs came into play. Originally, it kind of looked like Rollins was going to use the handcuffs on Dominic to then keep beating him with the kendo sticks. It did not go that way. He knocked out Dominic and actually ended up handcuffing Ray to the ropes. And then it looked like he was going to turn and go towards Mrs. Mysterio, as we're calling her here tonight. And that's when it was like, oh my God, where is Rollins going to go with this? Rollins and Murphy have done some shady things as the Monday Night Messiah and crew, but going on to attack Dominic's mother would be next level.
Yeah, I thought at that point that we might have seen a turn, because I expected Seth to win this, but that was the moment where I was like, oh man, they might turn Dominic up to 11 because he gets incensed if, you know, Seth does something to his mom, you know, or just give that shock win, like maybe she was going to come down and distract Seth, you know, something like that was where they had me kind of going. And they ultimately didn't do that, but the whole moment, the storytelling across the board was good because it did pull you in different directions and kind of keep you on your toes as far as exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. So in the process of going after Mrs. Mysterio, Dominic comes back. He takes out Murphy. He goes after Rollins, starts beating on him, gets him back in the ring. He had hit or attempted to hit a frog splash earlier in the match. So he goes for a second frog splash, but Rollins gets the knees up. And at this point, Dominic is just too winded. His chest is busted. Rollins hits him with the stomp. Ray's handcuffed, watching on. Rollins gets the 1-2-3. And then in true heel fashion, takes out the handcuff key, and drops it on a downed Dominic and just walks out.
Yeah, it was a good Seth moment. Once again, Dominic has nothing to be ashamed of. He proved that he can hang in the ring with some top-notch talent, and we'll have to see where he goes carrying on the Mysterio legacy.
We believe he can do it. He's green, but he's got a bright future. Next up was the second of the double matches, the Raw Women's Championship match. Sasha Banks, the champion, taking on Asuka. Bayley, of course, at ringside, cheering on her best friend, Sasha. Like we said, an whole part of the first match was taking out Asuka's knee, and that became prevalent out the gate as Sasha went right for the knee that Bayley had been targeting. And I thought it was great. I love storytelling like that. I love when you work down a single part of the body, and then that becomes the story for the match. So to see it happen in the first match, on to the second match, and one big story, like you had said, love to see it, love to see more of it. Asuka tries to fight back. We get a couple roll-around scrambles. Sasha rolls out of the ring to try to catch her breath. Of course, Asuka hunts her down, brings her back into the ring, and gets her into a few different submission attempts, but Sasha claws her way out. A lot of just real chaos all over the place. They spill halfway out of the ring. And then I will say, Sasha hits this insane bump when they're spilling out of the ring. So it's just this bit of a chaos right on the apron of the ring. They're tangled up. Sasha hits this flip over bomb.
It was like a sunset bomb.
It was like a sunset bomb off the side of the turnbuckle, off the apron, that took Asuka down to the outside of the ring on the mat, and it looked vicious.
Oh my God, the thud that Asuka made when she hit that mat was one of the most vicious bumps I've heard in a while. The momentum that Sasha had coming off the turnbuckle with the flip straight into the power bomb, you just whipped Asuka right off the apron, and I was like, ooh, I was like, that one might have knocked the wind out of her a little bit.
Yeah, wow, and it just, it looked like her head hit.
Yeah.
You know, the angle of it all, the selling of it all, even Bayley, who was right there on top of it, just looked shocked, like, oh my God, that looked like it sucked. The only thing that didn't sell it was the ref didn't come running out of the ring. So I assumed, okay, well, if the ref didn't come running out of the ring, he knows that she's okay.
So yeah, so you mentioned the ref, and obviously she was okay there. You know, one thing when it came to the injuries, I do want to say, especially with the injured leg story, was that I did really like that Asuka was selling that really hard early on, but I did feel like she kind of let it go as the match went on, and it didn't become such a pivotal point as I expected it to, because usually if they're going to run a storyline like that where the person is injured coming out, it'll get worse as the match goes on. Sure. And it was almost like Asuka kept getting better, and then maybe she would remember a little bit here and there that she had an issue with the leg. I don't know if you caught that, but that was my one thing about, you know, the quote-unquote injured leg.
No, I didn't. I got so, like, infatuated with it at the beginning of the match. I was like, ooh, they're continuing the leg story. I love it. I love it. I was actually totally lost that by the end of the match, it was something completely different because, of course, at the end of the match, a lot of back and forth, big DDTs and missile drop kicks, Banks trying to roll out and get breathers throughout the entire time. Asuka just kept staying on top of her and doing whatever she could to get her back in the ring, to keep the fight going, to try to win that championship. But Sasha just kept running away and trying to heal her way out of the situation.
Yeah.
But eventually, as it boiled down to the end of this match, so they break up after a reversed bank statement that got Asuka to put the Asuka lock on.
Yep.
All sorts of crazy submission moves. Didn't quite work out. They break it up, and we see this scene that we saw in the first match.
A little familiar,
where they set everything up right there on the apron, just like we saw in the first match. We've got Sasha, you know, hooked into the ropes, Bayley standing up on the apron, and Asuka charging at them, looking for the hip bump. But the big difference here is Bayley does not take the bump that Sasha took for her earlier. You know, earlier we saw Sasha push Bayley out of the way, take the hit, which allowed her to capitalize. We did not see that here.
Right.
Bayley doesn't take the bump. Asuka gets the advantage. She drops an elbow on Bayley, which knocks her out, then rolls over on Sasha, puts in the Asuka lock. Banks has no choice, has to tap, and loses that Raw Championship belt. Very interesting moment. As you know, like I said, those subtle cues all throughout this friend feud situation with Bayley and Banks. They are tag team champions. And now here we are. We saw Sasha helping Bayley retain, but Bayley not returning the favor. And the fact is, in 1 week at WWE Payback, they've got to defend their belts together.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens there. And you could tell at the end that Sasha was not happy about what happened with Bayley. Though, I will say, she tapped out.
She did.
It ain't Bayley's fault that Sasha tapped out to the Oscar lock. So let's just put that out there, you know? But yeah, it was not reciprocated. She was pissed. It almost made me think that maybe we're going to see the fracture a little bit sooner, because that seemed like a pretty pivotal moment. And if they lose the titles come this weekend, then I almost guarantee we're going to see Sasha versus Bayley for the SmackDown title at a future pay-per-view or maybe Survivor Series as the next major coming up. This was a good match, and it was a good part two to essentially that opener like we mentioned. But the one downfall to kind of any time they do this, but especially with Sasha's track record of just losing championships when she's defending them, I really expected it. It was kind of telegraphed that Sasha was going to lose this match.
Yeah, I figured Asuka going into the night was going to win at least one.
Yeah.
Maybe two, but at least one of them. I wasn't 100% sure which one it was going to be. And it, now that you said that, it makes me realize, yeah, Sasha has an awful track record at defending her belts.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a little sad that she lost this one. So we'll see.
She might have some of the worst defense numbers in all of, like, modern wrestling.
It's true.
She's got, like, five or six wins and title wins, but I think that she has lost the belt in her first defense, like, 90% of the time.
Well, it's tough business when that title defense is against Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, that's true. It's usually Charlotte.
So we'll move on to the last two matches of the night. That, of course, is the WWE Championship match, then the WWE Universal Championship match. So the Drew McIntyre-Randy Orton took the sub-main card, I guess we'll call it, because they always build these as a double main event, but you all know that the last match is the real main event. So Drew McIntyre, the champion, going up against Randy Orton. This was a really solid, hard-hitting match. We said it kind of on the Keith Lee cross match where it was two big hosses doing big hoss things. And you could almost say that about this match as well. These dudes are both massive, 6'4 to 6'5, 6'6 guys, well into the 250s, just slapping the hell out of each other.
Yeah, I liked how this match got into that, but it started out with a lot of ring psychology, some storytelling. Randy Orton just continued to show off his mastery in ring and messing with Drew McIntyre, you know, sliding out of the ring, sliding in the ring, tripping him up when they're running the ropes. And you could see it got in Drew's head and he had to adjust how he was approaching the Viper. And I just thought that that was all really well done. It made you really interested in what was going to happen. And they definitely turned it up then from there with the intensity, a couple big moves outside on the announce table that refused to break.
Yeah.
and honestly, it actually, I don't know if you caught this, but it refused to break in the Braun and Bray match too.
Oh.
And so it was maybe the most resilient announce table I've ever seen in my life. When you think about how big all those guys are, hitting it 2-3 times and never collapsing. Usually those things break like butter.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's like balsa wood.
They just fall right apart, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it just held up and kept on going, you know, it was the real MVP. But all in all, I actually had this as my match of the night. I thought that it hit all the boxes as far as what you want in two heavyweight guys battling over a men's title. And I really am hoping maybe we see a little bit more out of these two moving forward.
I definitely would. I don't know if I want to see this feud totally continue, because I can't believe in a Randy Orton belt right now. Like, I think eventually, you know, he'll get another one before he retires, and I think it would be epic if they set up Randy Orton versus John Cena,
right,
for most titles of all time. That would take Randy getting two more title runs and then an epic showdown. So maybe in the future, I know at one point or another we talked about Randy getting the belt, which would make an easy transition to Edge coming back and getting the belt to finish off that feud. But I say all this, but at the same time, I'm not ready for Drew to give up the championship yet. I like Drew McIntyre as champion.
So it's interesting that you say that, because going into this match, I almost completely expected Randy Orton to win. And it was mostly because of the fact that if you look at how old he is, even though he is going strong, and Randy Orton is still, without a doubt, one of the best in the business, he's got only a limited number of years on his career at his age, and he needs two or three more title wins to match up to Cena for something like that. So at some point, it's got to happen.
You'd hope. You hope.
Right. So I was kind of thinking, like you mentioned, you know, he takes the belt off Drew here. Then maybe he drops it again. He gets it back, you know, like get two wins or two championship runs kind of quick just to add to the totals. Because Cena's no spring chicken either.
Yeah.
Both those guys have limited years left on their tank. And so I was a little surprised to see that that didn't happen. But I have to say, this match put Drew over for me.
Nice.
I did not really have anything against Drew McIntyre, but I didn't really watch a lot of wrestling when he first came in. Like, a lot of people remember him when he was the Chosen One and the Future and all that stuff from back in the day. I don't. Kind of seen him off in the distance on the indies and stuff like that here and there. Since he's been back, he's kind of been boring. They've only used him here and there in anything that's slightly interesting. Didn't really turn him loose.
No. Well, he was like Dolph Ziggler's bodyguard for a bit.
Right, exactly. And now seeing him as champ has kind of given me more interest in him because he's kind of turned up some of the things with his character, his personality. But this match, seeing him go into the full toolbox, high ropes, power moves, tons of intensity, yelling at Orton, you know, through the match, like he made me believe that this dude can be a long-term world champion.
Yeah. 100%. I think maybe what does it for me in Drew McIntyre is I've watched too many WWE behind the scenes bits where you hear the stories of like, yeah, he was the Chosen One. And then they tasked him with three-man band and he totally failed because that's where he was when we first started really getting back into wrestling. He was in three-man band and that was awful. You know, top to bottom, it was kind of three misfits trying to make something work that just wasn't gelling. So he leaves, he gets that intensity, he comes back. And so I've seen enough of those behind the scenes things where I think that makes me like him a little more.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm coming from. I like the struggle that he went and he did the indie scene. He proved himself. He beefed up because that was something that they talked about, I guess, in the WWE 24 that aired right after SummerSlam last night.
Yeah.
That he basically got fired and said, when I come back, I want to be a legitimate contender to Brock Lesnar.
Right.
What do I need to do to become a legitimate contender for Brock? Gain weight, put on muscle, and grow chest hair.
Yeah.
And he did all of it.
When he dyed his hair, he's got the black hair now and the beard. Like, his whole look is just significantly more impressive. So this made me a fan. He's probably never going to be a top guy for me, but once I watched this match, I was like, okay, I see everything that's going on with Drew. And I think that he could probably wrestle with anybody and have a 5-star match. So the only reason why I said that I think that maybe we see the feud go forward between Orton and Drew is because of how it ended. And I'll let you kind of describe how the match ended here.
Here's how it goes down. Orton drops McIntyre and goes full Viper. He's setting himself up for that big-ass RKO. And McIntyre is too slow to get up, so instead of going RKO, Randy starts to set up the punt, because Randy has now brought back the punt.
He never hit the RKO the whole match, right?
Yeah, he kept trying to hit RKOs the whole match, and that's kind of where, like, there's a bit of a knock, where, like, Randy is too reliant on the RKO, and Drew might be too reliant on the Claymore kick.
Yeah.
There's so much, and there's a lot to this match that I guess we skipped over. There was a few attempts at the draping DDT. McIntyre hit his Glasgow Kiss. There was, you know, clothesline over the ropes. There were a lot of big moves, a lot of big chops and slaps. So it was a hard-hitting big hoss match. But down here at the end, Randy was going for the punt. McIntyre reverses the punt into a massive, massive powerbomb.
Yep.
And then Drew starts hyping up for the Claymore kick. He goes for it, but he misses. Orton goes for the quick RKO. McIntyre reads the move. He sees the RKO coming and hits him with a backslide pin. So he doesn't hit him with his finisher and just gets the quick roll up. 1, 2, 3. McIntyre escapes with his belt, still champion, rolls out of the ring. Everyone's in shock.
Well, and that's exactly why I think that maybe we see this feud move forward, because this match ended up, like, they kind of set it up with, you know, Orton being the old pro, you know, way better talent, way more in-ring capable. Drew's this guy that they've just wanted to make the Chosen One. And it's not how Drew sells himself, right? But it was kind of how some of the build was. almost like Drew can't hang with Randy Orton. So throughout the match with the misses on the RKO and some of the signature moves, I felt like neither guy really got to hit all of their signature moves and do all of the things they typically like to do. And then you had that quick, abrupt pin that Michael Cole sells, or whatever, Todd Phillips, whoever it was on the call, was like, "You didn't see that coming," or whatever the tagline was, right, for SummerSlam, yeah. You know? And I was like, "You're right, but fuck you." And so it just kind of gave me that feel of like, he got him, you know, they were kind of toe-to-toe. Neither of them got the edge. Drew kind of escaped with his pin. And so maybe we haven't seen like the full battle between these two guys.
I could see that. And maybe Randy is the only appropriate person to take on Drew McIntyre right now, because Drew McIntyre took out Brock Lesnar.
Right.
And so if you're a monster that can take out a monster, you need somebody that can hang, because if you run him in there with a Seth Rollins, well, he fought Seth Rollins, I should say that, and
right.
beat him.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether he's going up against a Seth Rollins, a KO, a Dolph Ziggler, one of the smaller guys, he's just going to run roughshod. So maybe this is the appropriate feud, and I should retool how I'm looking at it. I liked the Randy Edge feud so much, and then Edge got hurt. So then it kind of felt like, what do? And I'm just missing Edge. And that's really all it is like, Edge came back, I got excited, and now he's gone again, and I'm sad.
Well, and we're due for a rubber match between the two of them with Orton and Edge, so that is a good point. You make me think, though, now that you say that, you know, I think that there really are only a few guys on the roster. Maybe Braun, maybe Roman.
Yeah, size-wise.
Maybe Keith Lee in a surprise move, when he comes up, being a big guy. But you're right, you know, with Drew's presence, the intensity, the fact that he took that belt off Brock, there's a lot of build there, so they need some equally strong opponents to really live up to his status right now.
Fair enough. So it brings us to the main event of the night, the WWE Universal Championship match. Champion Braun Strowman going up against The Fiend Bray Wyatt. It was a Falls Count Anywhere match, everybody, and Michael Cole was determined to make sure that you understood that it was a Falls Count Anywhere match.
Hey, Kyle.
Yeah.
Did you know this was a False Count Anywhere match?
No way. Really? Oh, man. I'm so happy Michael Cole reminded me of that every 25 seconds. It was definitely needed. Man is great at what he does, you know, with the advertisements and this and that, but he's got to rework his style.
I hate Michael Cole.
And I liked him back in the day. I liked him with his stupid goatee in the 90s and his baggy dress shirt. But now I just freaking hate him. It's
Denim Dan Michael Cole, is what you're saying? Like when you had like the WWE denim button down like every day.
That's a good look, man. That's a good look. Go back to, maybe if he goes back to that, I'll like him more. I don't know. I don't want to get sidetracked hating on Michael Cole. Between that and the WWE network for 99, like that crap. Like I think it's just the way he says WWE. Lose your voice and then scream like you're Joey Styles, and then I'll be okay. Anyways, let's get to it. The Fiend enters the ring with the longest entrance of the night. It clocked in at a smooth 20 minutes. Then, of course, Bray, it's comedy hour now here in the WWE Universal Championship match. It is a Falls Count Anywhere match. The Fiend gets to the ring, super long entrance. Braun comes in to the ring. Once again, two big hosses doing two big hoss things. Braun smashes Bray in the face right out the gate.
Yeah.
But the Fiend just laughs it off and attacks back. I still kind of like the Fiend no-selling stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely part of his shtick. And while he's come down a little bit on the mystique that they had built with him when he first showed up, I do like that he's still working that in. He's still acting like a strong guy at all times.
Yeah, definitely no matter what. Braun is kind of rocked by him fighting back after, you know, the straight punch to the face. They battle to the outside. The Fiend hits Braun with a toolbox.
Yeah.
Which is a play back into the Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman, part of the Wyatt family era. So nice little callback there. Braun gets the gut shot reversal at some point and takes the offense and just starts smashing the Fiend all around the arena.
Yep.
You know, the choke slam onto the table, hits him with the stairs. They get back in the ring. He hits him with a running power slam. and the Fiend is just no-selling. At one point, he does get a two-count pin, but nothing more.
Right.
The Fiend won't go down. They go up the ramp and into the backstage area. There are tons of slams into barricades. The Fiend kind of reverses the momentum of stuff and hits a couple Sister Abigails on the floor. The Fiend goes for a pin, gets a solid two count, but these are two big dudes that aren't just going to go down.
Yeah, I really liked that they went into gorilla position for a bit because we don't really see that very often, you know, in all the years of wrestling and all the matches that have spilled out around the arena. Gorilla position is a little sacred, and I think one or two times, if I was really trying, could I think of a moment where I've seen a match go in there and make it a specific part, not just pass through or dip in and come back out, but they actually wrestled in gorilla position, throwing them off the walls. Like you said, couple Sister Abigails and a pin attempt, and then ultimately they came back out. I was a little surprised. I felt like for being in the closed arena, and maybe it was just because of what we saw with like Orton and Edge in WrestleMania, where they literally went around every room of the arena at the time, I was expecting a little bit more from the falls count anywhere aspect.
Yeah.
Like they spent a lot of time at the ring or around the ring. I was expecting some interactions maybe with the TVs and the Thunderdome. Like what if Braun would have picked up one of those TVs with the fans and like smashed the Fiend with it, you know, or something like that?
That would have been cool. Yeah, I would have been all right with that.
That's kind of what I was expecting, right? But maybe Vince's new toy is a little too new to damage. But it was still a good match. It was making me chuckle a little bit because when I was taking notes, I said here, it was probably the worst match of the night because the card actually ended up being so good beginning to end, but it was still better than a Brock finale.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'd agree with that. I don't know if I'd give it worst match of the night. I don't know which one I would put it worst match of the night, but it entertained me enough that with the big hits, you know, and I like two big guys. Like, if we're going to see two big guys, these are both athletic and could do things, but that's not the story they're telling. They're telling an all-out war. That's what I'm going to want to see. Throw some barricades around. Somebody throw a set of stairs. We saw a suplex into the Titantron, which knocked out a few panels. That was pretty big and pretty cool. Definitely saw them work their way back down to the ring, and at which point, Braun, just not able to get the win, starts to go a little crazy.
Yeah.
And he gets outside the ring and he picks up a box cutter.
Oh my God, I cringed.
I didn't know what he was going to do with it. I had no idea where they were going to go.
Exactly. Especially with Bray, and you just don't know what's going to happen with the Fiend. He just, everything's over the top and pushes the limits. And so when Braun grabbed that box cutter, my skin crawled.
Like, yeah, I mean, he could have just openly cut him. You got to feel like, yeah, like you said, Bray Wyatt would be open to bleeding a little bit.
Straight New Jack on him.
I thought for a moment when he started to cut up the ring, because he gets down on all fours and starts to cut up the ring to expose the wood underneath of it, I thought maybe he was going to be like cutting a hole to hell and that was the route they were going to take. And I'm like, this really isn't going to work if that's where they go. But ultimately, he just exposed the wood to try to drop the Fiend on the wood. However, the Fiend gets a reversal and slams Braun on the wood. He hits his like rock bottom styled move to Sister Abigail's. And I was a little shocked by this, but also not shocked by this. The Fiend gets the win. He covered him and got the win.
Yeah, I was hoping for Braun to continue his reign. I'm a big Braun fan, and I think that while he's had some good moments, this feud has been pretty solid, and so it was a little bit back and forth with me. Like, I was sad that Braun won, but I actually am hoping that we get a little bit more out of the two, because I think now that puts him at 1-1 with big matches, right? Because they fought a couple months back at a pay-per-view, I thought, at the beginning of all this, and Braun won, and then now we've got one with The Fiend. I might have to check the stats on that.
Yeah, I'd say I'm not sure.
But I was thinking it was essentially tied between the two of them as far as the big matches go, and so, okay, maybe Braun will get another shot at the belt, and maybe that won't be the case with what we saw come fairly shortly after The Fiend pinned him.
Yeah, The Fiend gets the win, and then we see the big post-match return. It was Roman Reigns coming in and cleaning house. He jumped The Fiend, then he spears Braun on the outside, gets a chair, and just really starts to go ham on Braun on the outside of the ring, making sure he's down and out. Then he turns his attention to The Fiend, who's in the ring, spears Bray Wyatt, and then naturally he picks up that belt. He's talking trash, saying you're just a freak in a mask, and this belt has always been mine. And the show actually closes with him standing tall with the belt in his hand, wearing that new merch, wreck everyone and leave.
Yeah, he kind of went heel.
Did he?
What were your thoughts there? I mean, like, it was tough because you got Braun, who's essentially babyface, and you got The Fiend, who is definitely a heel. But just the way Roman was acting and, you know, pulling out the chair and just pummeling Braun with the chair, like, he hit him like 10 times, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He went crazy.
Right. Those are very typical heel turn moments in wrestling where a babyface who doesn't usually use weapons and things like that will go off the deep end a little bit. And so it's Roman, and, you know, they've teased heel turn or not a few times, but this was the one moment where I was like, it might be here, or he may come with a little bit more of an edge. I don't know. You know how I hate Roman. I don't know about you anymore, but I still hate Roman. But it gave me a point of interest. I was like, okay, we'll have to see exactly what he does with this.
I definitely hate Roman, and it was this exact moment that I figured out why I hate Roman. But I'm going to, and I'll get to that, but he could be going heel. I've actually thought about it all day. I was like, was Roman Reigns meant to be a heel in this situation? And part of me wants to say, yeah, absolutely. He came in, he destroyed everybody with no regard to who was good and who was bad, went crazy with the chair. But we've also seen that, like, serious side out of Roman Reigns before.
True.
And he's still a good guy, but he understands that he has to, like, do bad things to get the job done.
That's a good point, yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it's kind of vague where they could really go either way with that. I'd love to see a full-blown Roman Reigns just being an ass.
Hey, it might actually make me like him for once.
Yeah, I really think it would be sweet. But the reason I've officially pinpointed why I don't like Roman Reigns. And originally I thought it was because his in-ring skill set, and maybe it's still a little bit of that, but it's everything else. And maybe this isn't his fault, but Roman Reigns is so literal about everything. So his new slogan, wreck everyone and leave, which is exactly what he came and did.
Yeah.
Before it was that, it was the big dog gimmick, which at one point turned into dog food matches with Baron Corbin and a giant dog animation on his entrance. He literally turned into a dog.
That's true.
Right?
It's a good point, yeah.
And then his other one, well, then he's got the Superman punch, which is just exactly what it looks like. It's a Superman dive punch.
Yeah.
And then the final piece, I'm not a good guy and I'm not a bad guy. I'm the guy.
Yeah, it's a good point.
And so everything about Roman Reigns is exactly what he is and, like, what's going on. It's like the epitome of spoon feeding me the story.
Yeah.
That wrestling can be sometimes. And I understand there's young fans out there and they need it. I get that. And I totally understand that. And there's wrestling has always been considered a big show with lots of moving parts and different stories. So I'm okay with all of that. But you can't expect me to just like this guy when I'm starting to notice all of these things.
Yeah, it's a very good point, you know, and we all know how Vince feels about him. So he gets the push pretty much no matter what is going on or how good or bad his gimmick is at a time. I'm not going to lie, and I know that this is going to sound a touch harsh, but this is kind of the traditionalist wrestling fan in me. I was a little bummed to see him come out and destroy The Fiend and Braun, two of the biggest guys in the company at the moment, two of the biggest powerhouses, the way he did after being gone for the last 5 months. And I know that COVID and family and personal decisions, I respect you for that. I have no beef with Roman Reigns for taking care of himself and his family, given all that's going on. I don't have any beef with anybody that makes decisions when it comes to that stuff.
Right.
But to just be gone off camera during one of the hardest times the company's had, while these other guys are out here working their asses off to carry things through, keep the brands relevant, keep them alive, entertain the fans, and then you come back and now you're just like right back on top.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That one was a touch of a rub for me. Like, I'm not going to die on that hill, but I was like, there's another reason why I hate Roman Reigns, because no matter what is going on, they're just going to spoon feed them right back down your throat and put him right back on the top and disregard what everybody else has got going on.
It's true. I didn't even think of all of that. When Roman Reigns comes back, and maybe it's because I just associate Roman Reigns with the top. You know, Roman Reigns, if he's on the roster and he's on the show, he's got to be involved in the title picture or some maybe like an Undertaker style story.
Yeah.
That is near the top. Roman Reigns is well past challenging for the IC belt these days.
Right.
Unlike what we're seeing with AJ Styles, who's a bona fide star, and he's making the IC belt look awesome and is able to do it. Like, we're never going to see Roman Reigns do that again. If he's on the card, he's got to be at the top. And so that assumption that he's here, so he's got to be at the top, prevented me from thinking about that. But you're 100% right. And if I was in that locker room, respect the man. He had twin babies. You know, he himself has some health issues, family health issues. Respect all around. You've got to make that tough decision. But we've also seen other wrestlers in that locker room get punished for making smaller decisions, like cutting their hair.
Yes.
And then
exactly
this guy, you know, is just right back in, and you're right, and it's a great point.
And I'll reiterate, for anybody in the back that may have taken what I just said out of context, I have no problem with him as a person. And I know everybody says that Roman Reigns is a great human being, and I believe it. But with the character and his role, you know, as a wrestler and what happened, it rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. And I would have rather have seen The Fiend get another moment going out on top, you know, close it out in the creepy side. I don't know. We don't have to kick a dead horse too much here, but that just wasn't for me. It was probably the lowest point of the entire card for what was otherwise what I thought one of the best nights of wrestling that WWE has put out top to bottom in months.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the whole pay-per-view was extremely entertaining, and even the matches in the slight moments that a few of them stumbled, they quickly recovered and gave you a top-to-bottom, very entertaining, positive, great new environment show, and I'd love to see what the WWE is going to continue to do in the Thunderdome.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this chapter, be sure to hit the subscribe button to get new chapters of Geek Ketchup every 2 weeks on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Be sure to follow the show on social media, and you can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Geek Ketchup Podcast, or on Twitter and Instagram at Geek Ketchup Pod. Links to all these accounts are in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. Stay saucy, you nerds.